The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, June 1st, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Jet Jesko. Jet, first thing to mention as we get this show going is the passing of Flyers legend Rick McLeish on Monday, and we'll certainly talk a lot about that later on in the show. And the Phillies were 24-17 just 2 weeks ago and tied with the Nationals for first place. 7 days later, they were 26-21 and 2 games out, and now 14 days later, 26-26 after losing 5 in a row to the Cubs and the Nationals.
Yeah, and it's probably a situation, Bill, where they weren't as good as they looked those first 6 weeks of the season when they were 7 games over .500, but they're not as bad as they've been over the past week when they've lost 5 in a row and I guess have lost 4 series in a row now. So I think they're somewhere in between, but yeah, right now they're really scuffling.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot about that here in the second half of the show as well. As the, boy, you know, we certainly should be happy one-third of the season in. We're at 500, but darn, I find myself being disappointed.
Yeah, I hear you, because they kind of got our hopes up a little bit. Even though it was somewhat of a mirage, I guess, they weren't really hitting even when they were winning, but the pitching was just so good. Well, now the pitching is still pretty good, but it's slacking off a little bit, especially, you know, some of the guys in the bullpen maybe. And, well, they're just not scoring enough runs is what it comes down to. You're not going to win when you're scoring 1 or 2 runs a game. They're still the lowest scoring team in baseball. They're not hitting home runs. And it's catching up with them, especially against good teams like Detroit and Washington now.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later on as we get going. But, hey, tell you, you know, I was supposed to be in Charlotte Airport as we tried to do this show a little remotely again, as we have to do from time to time. And I was able to jump an earlier flight and get back to Orlando, but I was not able to make it back home yet. So if you have to pull over to the side of the road to do a mobile show and you're 1,000 miles away from Philadelphia, where else to do the show but a Wawa parking lot?
Hey, Wawa's expanding down in Florida. They're going to take over the Sunshine State, from what I understand.
They are, and I am in the parking lot at the Wawa on International Drive, just a few minutes from Disney World. But I thought it was, as I was looking for a place to pull over to get this done, I thought, where else to go but a Wawa? So we got a little Philly flavor, and afterwards I might have to go in and get one of those sandwiches before I get home and my wife finds out I ate something I'm not supposed to.
I hear you. Hey, by the way, we have our guest on the line, so we can talk to him whenever you're ready, Bill. And we got a big show tonight.
Oh, we do. We do. And, you know, we're excited to have Breakfast on Broad co-host, former Eagles tackle and Steelers Super Bowl champion Barrett Brooks joining us tonight.
Oh, you got
yeah,
the
we
all
are.
Too Bar- kind. All too kind. The check is in the mail. The check is definitely in the mail.
This is a guy who played 4 years with the Eagles. He finished up his career 4 years with the Steelers, played at a few other stops in between, and now he's a big TV star on Breakfast on Broad. So we're really happy to have you with us tonight, Barrett.
I really appreciate you guys having me on, you know, so I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
Hey Barrett, before we get started on all the Eagles business and everything else, I wanted to tell you that you and I probably, we have a mutual acquaintance. I don't know if we have a mutual friend, but we have a mutual acquaintance from your days with the Steelers.
Who's that?
Kedrick Vincent.
How do you know Kedrick Vincent? Of all people, you know Shrek. How do you know him?
I was Kedrick Vincent's high school football coach for all 3 of his years. I was his offensive line coach down here at Lake Gibson High School in Lakeland, Florida.
Oh, my goodness. Talking about 6 degrees of separation. Kedrick Vinson, I played with him, really, really good guy. I mean, he finally came into his own later on in his career, became a pretty good offensive lineman. I don't know where he went after he left the Steelers, you know, but he was a really, really good friend of mine. How's he going right now?
He's doing good. I actually haven't seen him or talked to him for a little while as well, but he ended up getting 10 years in the NFL between the Steelers, the Ravens, the Carolina Panthers, Arizona, and finished up in Tampa Bay. So he got 10 years in the league.
Wow. You know, hey, I don't care where you get him from, as long as you get him, you know.
That's right. That's right. So,
Kedrick Vinson,
I wanted to get that out there before we get talking about the post days. Great guy. Great guy, Kedrick
Vinson. Yeah, we just call him Shrek, you know, but hey.
Well, I won't tell you what we called him, but that's all right. All right. Well, hey, before we get started with our show, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards Collectibles Tribute Question again tonight. We'll be giving away the signed 8x10 color photo of Eagles star linebacker Jordan Hicks to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be asking that question right around 7:27 or so. So write this number down so you're ready. 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. All right, Chet, let's get started. Let's see if we can grill Barrett some.
Hey, Barrett, before we talk Eagles, you've been doing Breakfast on Broad on a Comcast network for about 13 months now. I want to ask you, what time does your alarm go off in the morning, and how do you like getting up that early?
Well, it goes off at 2:15, 2:30, 2:55, and 3:05. And in between some of those times is when I get up. I have to be at work at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I usually get there about 4:05. So it's kind of expected.
Oh,
but you know what? My body's used to it now. After 13 months of doing it, you know, it's kind of just like, all right, it's an old hat now. So, I mean, I enjoy the hours simply because I'm done after 8:30, 9 o'clock every day. So, I mean, it's good. Unless I have to do like I did tonight, I have to do quick slants tonight for Comcast Sportsnet today also.
Yeah, you're a busy guy. I saw you on there. You did a great job. So, yeah, you're a hard worker. This has been a very busy offseason for the Eagles, so let's get right to that. We're talking both in terms of the front office moves and players coming and going. What's your general assessment of all the moves they've made since putting Howie Roseman back in charge?
Well, he made sure he totally erased anything that had Chip's name on it, any Chip-isms that were in the locker room. Anything related to Chip is now out of the locker room with the exception of Sam Bradford. I think he's the only thing that Chip brought in that he actually kept. So, and he's on his way out the door also. So I think that they really came in and wanted to customize the defense to Schwartz. And on offense, I think they have a little bit of hurdles to get up, you know, as far as all the receivers. But I do think they're going to be a lot better than people think they are.
Well, Barrett, being an old offensive lineman and me being an old offensive line coach, that's where I always look first. And last year there were some serious struggles. But I think they've upgraded that pretty well. What's your take on where they stand right now?
They absolutely did. Now Dennis Kelly and Matt Tobin will be on the bench where they belong. I don't think that they're really good reserves, but they're now reserves where they belong. As far as, you know, Barbary's a guy that I think he'll be efficient at the left guard position. I don't think that anybody beats him out. You know, Wesniewski won't beat him out. I don't think the rookie from Oregon State, he'll beat him out either. I think he'll be the mainstay at left guard. Brandon Brooks was definitely an upgrade. Either way you go with it, he's an intense guy. They now have a direction in which they can run the ball now, as opposed to them always running to Jason Peters' side. They're going to run to Brandon Brooks' side simply because, you know, him and Lane Johnson are probably a pretty good tandem as far as athletic guys and guys that can go out and get off on the ball. I think that also the depth on the offensive line has definitely been upgraded with Wesniewski being a guy that's interchangeable at any guard and at center. And Alan Barber is still efficient enough and still that much of a pro that he can shift out to, you know, to right tackle. And Lane Johnson could go over to left tackle. And they'll still have an efficient offense at bringing Wesniewski at left guard if anything happens where Jason Peters can't go on or, you know, his age finally creeps up on him. So I think that this offensive line on paper is going to be pretty good. I think they'll be efficient. They're not going to be really blowing people off the ball, but they'd be the accustomed fit for what they're trying to do, and that's run a quick style offense as far as, you know, three-step drops, 322 wide stick thunder, you know, quick acting play, 200 jet, all go. Those are all three-step drops. So they'll be efficient in that aspect. So as they progress forward, they'll open up the playbook a little bit. But right now, they're good enough right now to be a really good offense.
Got to talk about the quarterback situation. How do you see that playing out now with Sam Bradford there as the starter, we're told anyway, Chase Daniel backing him up, and then, of course, the rookie and the future franchise guy in waiting, Carson Wentz. How is this going to play out?
Well, I think Sam will play well enough simply because he's the king of getting big contracts, man. He fooled the Eagles into giving him a really big contract. I think he's efficient enough and good enough that he'll be okay. He's playing for a new contract. He wants to woo some of those teams that are out there that had some interest in him but didn't pull the trigger to trade for him. I think he'll go out and play well enough that he's going to garner the contract, the long-term contract that he was looking for with the Eagles, but he's not going to get since Carson Wentz got drafted. I think Carson Wentz is definitely the second-best quarterback on the roster right now. I think he's better than Chase at this point, but Chase holds the keys as far as knowing the offense and being very efficient at the offense. I watched all 3 days we could watch practice in the Eagles' practice schedule, and all three of them, you know, I saw a lot of timing things that were just off simply because they haven't had a chance to work with the receivers. The receivers haven't had a chance to work with them in this offense. So you see a lot of overthrown balls, a lot of underneath balls, and when they are doing team stuff, it's an awful lot of checkdowns because, number one, the defense don't know what they're doing yet because they're learning a new defense, and on offense, receivers and quarterbacks don't have a camaraderie together to really make things happen. So it's going to be a tough, tough, tough camp this year. Everybody's still learning, and, you know, from this point on, you know, until they learn this defense or until they learn this offense, they're going to be really hard-pressed to make some plays.
Barrett, I was not a real fan of the defensive scheme that Chip Kelly and Billy Davis had in place over the last couple of years, and just from the fact that I didn't feel like it gave the defensive backs much of a chance. I thought it put them out on an island, and I don't know if these guys were really good enough or not, but they certainly got exposed a lot. Do you see Jim Schwartz coming in and really changing that up and giving these guys a little better chance to succeed over there on defense?
Oh, absolutely. He's going to let them dogs up front eat. And his big thing is he's not going to bring a lot of defensive pressure. He's going to bring those four and drop back everybody else, which is more conducive to what, you know, schematically, what their defensive line can do. You know, Brandon Graham, you know, and there's nobody in the league that can block Fletcher Cox one-on-one. And the scheme now allows him to be responsible for only one gap as opposed to the two-gap system in the 3-4 system that he played with last year. So anytime you can let him loose and him being responsible for one gap and one gap only, I doubt if there's anybody in the league. In fact, I know there's nobody in the league that can block him consistently one-on-one, man-to-man. Then you got a guy like Benny Logan. Benny Logan had a step all year last year, and he's only getting better. I feel as though this is the time where he's playing for a new contract, so he's going to play a lot better. And it's, you know, he only has one gap responsibility as opposed to the two gaps that he had when he was playing at the nose. So it's more conducive for them to do that. The only problem I have right now are the defensive ends. Curry's probably the only proven one right now that can go out and really influence quarterbacks as far as pressure one-on-one. Brandon Graham's a guy that can get after it a little bit, but I don't know if he can get after it on a consistent basis. He's going to, you know, go from that wide nine for the most part on third down. So we'll see. Connor Barlin is not a defensive end. That's the only problem they have. He is a outside linebacker. He is a Sam linebacker. So I want to see what his transition is. But from the defensive back standpoint, Leos McKelvin, he's playing, you know, absolutely wonderful right now because he knows the system. He understands the system. Him and Ron Brooks are the two guys starting the corner. Roe, when he does come in, is that third corner. He stays in the outside, and they move Kelvin inside at the slot position. So as he progresses, he learns the system. Roe will be the starter, and I think that Carroll will be the other guy on the other side. He's just not healthy enough to play right now. But I think there'll be a drastic improvement simply because they'll have those guys at cornerback position. Of course, you know, the upgraded safety that they have with both of those guys is definitely a major impact on how he runs that defense.
Oh, I agree with you. And you mentioned Brandon Graham a couple times there. And, you know, I have not been a fan of Brandon Graham, but I think more so for the fact that they tried to make him an outside linebacker, and that's not what he is. And the same with Marcus Smith. I don't know if Marcus Smith is going to be good enough or not, but he's certainly neither one of those guys, and even Trent Cole in his last year here, they weren't going to be successful as linebackers. I thought they were fish out of water.
Yeah, they were. And Brandon Graham, this is a system that he played in, and he's more comfortable with, more familiar with, and it just fits his body style. You know, he's a small, squatty guy. He reminds me a lot of a tweener, like, you know, almost like a Teddy Bruschi type of guy. Teddy Bruschi never was that linebacker, that drop-back linebacker, linebacker that played Mike linebacker, but he also wasn't a guy that could rush the passer like most. So he was a tweener. I see Brandon Graham the same way. If you isolate him on a running back or on a tight end, he's going to win all day. But when you ask him to go against a guy that's 300 pounds, 350 pounds, and have him, you know, go head-to-head with him, play in, play out, I can't see that being a winning formula for a guy like him. He's a little on the small side. But I'll tell you what, he can get off the ball, man, and that's going to be his biggest saving point. That's all they're doing on. That's all they're working on right now, that quick twitch getting off the ball. And I'll tell you what, Curry's looking very, very good at it.
Barrett, I was trying to think of some guys who really need to step it up this season, and the guys who come to mind for me are Michael Kendricks at linebacker, Jason Kelce and Jason Peters on the O-line. Got to keep Peters healthy, of course. And, of course, the wide receivers, especially Nelson Agholor in his second season. Am I right about those four guys and anybody else who really needs to step it up?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, if you look at it, I would have to say that, you know, this is Kendrick's year that he needs to flourish, you know, at the will linebacker. He's a natural will linebacker. He's a guy that plays well out in space. This is a scheme that's more conducive to him being that will linebacker. He can now run free and make some plays, take care of his gap responsibility, and go get the ball. Hopefully he's not thinking through the defense as he's done in the past. I think he needs to be more instinctual. And if he has his instincts going, there's really not a guy that, you know, that's as athletic as he is at the linebacker position. Also, you know, the wide receiver position, you're absolutely right, you know, and you hit it right on the head when you talk about Nelson Agholor. He's the breakout player. He's the guy that really has the most earnest as far as being a guy that needs to make some plays. And he took a lot of that responsibility on himself for not, you know, competing last year. He said that he makes no excuses. He said the reason why he didn't play well is because he just didn't play well. He didn't blame it on an injury. He said if they put him out here, evidently they felt as though he was well enough that he'd go out and make a play. He didn't make the play, so he's taking it upon himself this year to make those plays. He's looked good in the camp the last 2 days. He's played very well. He's doing a lot of the little things that he didn't do last year. He had a problem with getting off man-to-man type of players, you know, that were very aggressive. Now he's doing the little things. You know, he's coming off his stems and pressing the DB whichever way, his opposite of where his route is going to send him. So if he's going inside, he'll press outside and then go inside. You know, same when he does on the outside. He'll press outside and then go inside. Those are little things that he didn't do before. He's running crisper routes. He's coming out of his breaks a lot faster. He's definitely taken this offseason to kind of hone in on being an NFL receiver. So you see a lot of improvement with him. Jason Peters, he just needs to stay healthy. He has a lot to prove as far as him being the elder statesman on the offensive line. He's a guy that can go out. Him being what he is right now is still one of the better tackles in the league. Everybody said, oh, he's lost a step. Him losing a step is still better than probably 70% of the tackles in the league. So I don't worry about Jason Peters. I think he'll be fine. I think the only reason why he didn't play as many reps last year and he kind of tapped out a little bit because he just lost all faith in Chip Kelly and his scheme. And that worries me a little bit, but I think that's the only reason why he didn't play as much as he should have played. He didn't feel as though he should work his body out for a coach that doesn't believe in him. So I really see him being healthy this year. I think he'll play better this year. And the thing, the practice schedule will be more conducive for him because he's not a guy that needs a lot of reps. He understands what he needs to get ready for a game. So once he feels as though he's ready for a game, I think Coach Peterson will kind of lay off and slack off on him and let him do his thing, which will help him in the long run because he knows how to pace his body and understands his body well enough that he'll be able to play later on in the season as opposed to him tapping out last year.
Well, Barrett, as I was getting ready to do the show and prepping for the show a little bit, I was doing a little research on Barrett Brooks, and I have to tell you, I learned something I certainly didn't know, and I'm going to guess probably 99.9% of the listeners and Eagles fans don't know. tell us about Barrett Brooks and the nursing school that you started, and that's far greater than football.
You know what? I really outkick my coverage with my wife. You know, she's very smart, and she's a nurse, and she understood that I couldn't play forever. So what does she do? She goes out and becomes, you know, gets an MBA in healthcare management and finance, and then turns right around and gets a master's in healthcare education. So I'm like, all right, let's open up a school because I'm not going to be able to play forever. So we opened up the school. I went back to school also, got an MBA in healthcare administration so I could negotiate contracts with hospitals. So, and you know, at the end of the day, you can't play as long as you think you're going to play. I played a lot longer than I knew I was going to play. So I ended up playing 12 years, and now that I've done, I wanted to make at least half what I made when I was in the NFL. And once I acquired that, I felt comfortable about retiring from the NFL. But a lot of players don't get like that. A lot of people don't understand that the NFL stands for not for long. You got to do what it takes to either put your money away or invest it wisely. And I chose to invest in my wife for this. So, you know, it's been pretty good. You know, it's called BA Technical School or Brooks Alternative Technical School. We teach EKG, phlebotomy, patient care tech, CNAs, and we also have a nursing program at, it's called LPN, so we teach LPNs also. So we understood that healthcare is probably one of the most inflation-proof businesses you can go in. There's always going to be sick people, there's always going to be old people. So we'll stay in the game because of those two factors.
I'm going to tell you that's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
See, Barrett, we do our research here. Yeah. Well, Bill came across that, and here's what I came across in doing my prep work for the show. I saw a story that you, as a 12-year-old, met Eagle Vaisikahama, and then you met him again 10 years later when the Birds drafted you, and he was a reporter for NBC 10. Can you briefly recap those two meetings with Vi?
Well, you know what? I mean, my uncle used to always take me to the state. He was working for the St. Louis Cardinals at the time, before they went to Arizona. And my uncle would always take me to the stadium, and, you know, they would give guys or kids tickets, extra tickets. The players would give guys extra tickets so they can go into the game. Well, every time they did it, you know, I wasn't a big fan of football because, I mean, believe it or not, I didn't like football. Football's hard, so I didn't like it. So I would be like, I don't want to go in the game. My uncle would say, all right, well, I'm going in the game. So I would let him go. So one time, you know, Vi came up and was like, hey, big fella, come here for a minute. So I was like, hey, what's going on, Mr. Sikahama? He said, hey, how come you never asked for tickets? I said, I'll tell you the truth, I don't like football. And he was like, what? I said, you're a big guy, you should play. I said, I know I should play, but I don't want to play. So he said, all right, well, come on in the locker room with me. He takes me in the locker room. He said, hey, man, you look down at my sneakers. And so I had holes, big holes in my sneakers. He said, hey, man, come in the locker room. Let me give you a pair of shoes. So, at the time I was, you know, 12 years old. So I wore a size 12 shoe. All the way up until I turned 15, my foot would progress as my age progressed. So, you know, my mom really couldn't afford, you know, shoes like that. So he goes over to Stump Mitchell's locker. Stump wears a size 12. He gives me Mitchell's ruse, and that's the first time I get a name brand pair of shoes is from Stump Mitchell, a pair of ruse that Vaisikahama got for me, you know. So he kept in touch with me for the rest of the season. I come in the locker room, talk to the guys, you know. And long story long, I end up getting drafted by the Eagles. So when I get drafted in the second round, they bring all the rookies up that got drafted and bring them into a big room and go through the press conference. And as I'm walking in, I look over. I said, Vaisikahama, Mr. Sip, what are you doing? You know who I am? And he looked at me like, yeah, you're the second round pick of the Eagles. Yeah, well, why you ask that? I said, you don't remember me. He said, should I? I'm like, you don't remember me? I said, man, you gave me my first pair of name brand shoes. He said, B? I'm like, yeah, it's me. He said, you're kidding. I'm like, yeah, man, you gave me my first pair of name brand shoes. Talking about 6 degrees of separation. He was the first guy that I met, the first media guy that I met when I got to Philly. Him seeing him and, you know, and us connecting back again, you know. So it was a great story, you know, and I really enjoy the fact that, you know, I see him every once in a while. We get to sometimes.
Yeah, that is a great story. Thanks for sharing that.
Well, hey, Barrett, we're running out of time, but what we do every time we have a new guest, what we try to do is a segment we call Fast Five. But basically, Chet asks five pretty easy questions, and he looks for five pretty easy answers. You up for that?
I'm up for it. Let's go.
All right. Barrett Brooks, you've played Quick Six, so now you're going to play Fast Five. It's June, Barrett, but based on everything we know right now, which team is most likely going to win the NFC East?
Oh, my God. I would have to say Dallas because they got a healthy quarterback. They have a running game now with Ezekiel. And then you get a turn right around. They got Dez Bryant. So they have the big three again. They got a quarterback, receiver, and a running back. So that combination won them a couple Super Bowls. So I have to go with them. It hates me, and it irritates me to no end, but I have to be true.
You're probably right. Now, Vegas has the Eagles at 7 wins in the upcoming season. You sound a little more optimistic, maybe. What is your early guess for Eagles wins?
You know what? I'm going to be more optimistic. I'm going to say they're going to win games. I think they're going to go 9-7, simply because nobody's giving them a fighting chance. And, you know, with them having a quarterback, they're going to rally – I mean, an ex-quarterback as a head coach, they're going to rally behind him because he played, you know, for this Eagles team. They're so tired of the chip-isms that they went through. They're going to embrace him, and they're going to play hard for him on games.
All right.
You know, winning this year.
Now, you played 12 years in the NFL on the O-line. Who were the two or three toughest guys to block during your career?
Oh, everybody calls him Reggie or Reggie White. I call him Mr. White. He was by far, you know, God rest his soul, but the hardest guy to block ever. You know, he was the best to ever play the game. In fact, they always say that Rice is the best player to ever play. No, it'd have to be Mr. White. He is the best player to ever play football. So I would have to say Reggie White. I also played against Derek Thomas. He's number two. And number three, I would have to say Patrick Swilling. He was a tough guy. You know, they called him Sweet Swill because he was definitely that good.
Awesome. Now, on Tuesday's Breakfast on Broad, Barrett, you boldly predicted the Cavs would beat the Warriors in the NBA Finals. Cavs in 6, I think you said. You sticking with that prediction?
Yes, I am sticking with it. I think they possess some real matchup problems. Everybody's talking about Steph. Well, I'm going to say that, you know, they have LeBron. Excuse me, they have LeBron. And who is going to stop Kyrie Irving? He's playing at a great level at this point. Kevin Love has stepped in the shoes that he's supposed to be playing in. And, I mean, those three are better than the two guys that almost beat them from the OKC. So that's why I'm saying that they have three superstars as opposed to two superstars that almost beat the Golden State Warriors. I'm going with the Cavs, and they have, you know, potentially the best player in the NBA, LeBron James.
All right. And finally, Barrett, it's the question on everybody's mind in the Philly area this month, Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram?
Oh, you know what? I want Brandon Ingram because he's more system-specific with what they're trying to do. But you can't pass on a player with the skill set of Ben Simmons. You know, he's a facilitator. He's a scorer. They talk about a jump shot. Nobody really has a jump shot coming into the league besides Steph. You know, if you look at Michael Jordan, it took him a long time to get his shot. And, you know, if you look at a guy like Magic Johnson, you know, he never had a shot. So he was a great facilitator. So I see Ben Simmons being that guy that can distribute to the team, make his teammates better. So I think they're going to go with Ben.
I hear you. Great job playing Fast Five, Barrett Brooks. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate you guys having me on, all right?
All right, Barrett. Thanks for taking it.
Definitely. Just give me a call. I'm in.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, Chad. Well, hey, I forgot to tell the Wawa people here to keep this thunder and lightning storm from me. So there might be a little background music here because we're in the middle of a good one right at the moment. All right.
Oh, man.
Okay. But, hey, it's trivia time. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. As we mentioned, we'll be giving away the signed 8x10 color photo of Eagles star linebacker Jordan Hicks, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person they can call in and correctly answer the question. So here we go. Barry Brooks played with the Steelers with a player that I coached throughout his high school career at Lake Gibson High School in Lakeland, Florida. What was his name? And I have to tell you, Chet, one of our loyal listeners, you know, Adam Ujesic, who calls in and talks with us, his wife, Samantha, graduated from the same high school, but probably 5 or 6 years later than this player, which is also the same high school my kids graduated from. So we'll see if she knows.
We shall see.
All right. Barrett Brooks played with the Steelers with a player that I coached throughout his high school career at Lake Gibson High School in Lakeland, Florida. What was his name? And if you were listening, you know the answer. All right, Chet, let's take a break and thank our Kisses, our sponsor shop for Kisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, by logging on to shopforkisses.org website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. And Chad,
hey,
as
Bill,
we said in the opening, yes, sir.
Before we go any further, just refresh my memory. Who did Barrett Brooks say was the toughest guy for him to block and the greatest defensive player he played against?
Actually, I think he said the greatest player to ever play. I believe
he did. He did say that, yes. And that would be Reggie White.
I believe he said Mr. White.
Mr. Reggie White. You got it.
Yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And I'm going to tell you, Chet, I saw that picture of Barrett Brooks dwarfing you as you fit up maybe close to his armpit. And I thought, you know what, it's really not worth trying to get into an argument with the big fella.
No. So I'm glad to see you kept quiet about that one. Good choice.
I will tell you, I appreciate you you bringing that up, because I already got a message from Bob Sullivan, who's listening to the show, that said, hey, tell him Reggie wasn't that good.
Why does that not surprise me?
That's right. Well, hey, Chet, as we said in the opening, the Phils are now 26-26, about a third of the way into the season, and certainly surprised everyone, at least up to this point. But as I mentioned, I'm a little disappointed that they crashed completely against these good teams, and they just can't hit and can't score runs.
And that's the problem. You know, they're just not able to score. And they're really meeting their match now against teams like Detroit and Washington. And now they've got a four-game set against Milwaukee coming up, so hopefully they'll win a couple of those. But then they have to play, I believe it's Washington and the Cubs again. Yeah, the Cubs at home and then the Nationals on the road. So it's not going to be easy. The Phillies are going to have to start hitting. They made a big trade today, of course, acquiring Jimmy Paredes from the Blue Jays. Paredes, 27 years old. He's a career 257 hitter in parts of six seasons, so I don't think he's going to really be a big addition.
That wasn't that Jeff Francoeur kind of guy that you were looking for last week.
No. But, hey, Cody Ashe's coming back, too. Cody Ashe should be able to go in a couple of days, so maybe he'll supply at least a little bit of pop if he gets playing in left field or whatever. So, hey, it can't hurt, right?
Yeah, well, I see Ashe going right in the lineup and going over to out left field, and you know, Peter Borges is going to certainly be the odd man out, I would think.
I would think so, and they sent Burris down today, which was, you know, a wise move. The guy can't hit a lick. One other thing today, I don't know if you saw this while you were traveling. Pete McCannon came out late this afternoon and announced that Ryan Howard will be sitting for the next three or four games. Tommy Joseph's going to play every day for the next three or four games anyway. Even if it's all right-handers, it's going to be Tommy Joseph in there. Is that a good move?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame. And we talk about this every week, and I like Ryan Howard, as do you. But, you know, it was just an absolutely brutal month of May for him, and I'm kind of to the point that even if Tommy Joseph hits, pick a number, 225, hits 225, a young Tommy Joseph at the plate learning is better than a Ryan Howard at this stage. I mean, I just don't see anything coming out of giving Ryan Howard a whole lot of at-bats at this point.
I agree entirely. You got to see what Joseph can do, just as we should have seen what, you know, Ruff could have done a little more than we did. He got his chance, didn't really do that much. But, yeah, I want to see what Tommy Joseph can do. He's 24 years old. He's got some power, obviously. He's got three home runs in the limited playing time he's had so far. So give the kid a chance, see what he's got.
Yeah, and you know, I think they've got to be able to establish something in the lineup to get Mikel Franco moving. You know, whether it's lack of protection in the lineup, maybe a little too much pressure he's putting on himself, you know, whatever it is, they've got to get more out of Franco. And, you know, the more you try to hit home runs, the harder they are to come by. So he needs to get back in the group where he's swinging a good bat, and the home runs will come if he can get himself straightened out a little bit. And with that, you know, we're seeing Odubel, you drop from about 340-ish, 342, down around 318, 320. He's starting to cool off a little bit, and they certainly can't afford a lineup with those two guys not hitting, because they are pretty much all that has been hitting.
Yeah, you got that right. And I hope that we're not seeing the beginning of a big, long slide. I mean, I think we know now they're not going to compete for a wild card spot as we hoped. Maybe that was just a pipe dream early on, but I don't think they're as bad as they have been the last couple of weeks, losing, you know, five games in a row, four series in a row now. I think they can hit a little more than they are, at least. Hopefully the pitching will hold up, and they might not get to a 500 record at the end of the season where they are right now, but hopefully they'll do a little better than we had expected, which was, I guess, 70 and 72 wins respectively on, you know, our predictions. So if they can get close to 500 and stay there for the season, I'd be happy with that at this stage in their development, knowing that better days are ahead with the guys coming up from AA and AAA over the next 2 years.
Well, Chad, I wanted to run this by you. What's your thought? I think I probably know it, but what's your thought on pulling starting pitchers out of the game, say after seven innings, regardless of the pitch count, because you have a setup guy and a closer that you think you need to use? And a perfect example the other night was Hellickson. Somewhere was it 79 pitches or something like that.
Yep.
Kind of cruising along, and you know, Neris and Gomez have been, you know, pretty rock solid. And for one night, Neris breaks down, has his worst outing of the year, and you know, Pete Buchanan's moves look really bad that night. I think they need to stretch these guys out a little bit, but they also have to protect these young arms at the same time.
Yeah, but I mean, hindsight is 20/20, and of course, because it backfired, it was the wrong move. But 79 pitches, and he was cruising, as you say. I would have kept him in there a little bit longer, and then maybe just gone right to Gomez in the ninth. Too many managers go by the book all the time just because, you know, that's what has worked in the past, so let's keep doing it. I understand the philosophy, but sometimes you got to go with your gut also and say, hey, this guy's pitching pretty well. I'm going to keep him in there for at least another inning. So I didn't like the move at the time, and, of course, the way it turned out, it really looks bad.
I think what they do is they get it in their mindset that these guys have to lock into these innings, and it really doesn't make any sense. There's no sense to say that Neris has to pitch tonight. If the situation didn't call for him to pitch, or even Gomez for that matter, situation
yep.
isn't there, by God, don't use him.
I agree. Stop going by the book just because you've done it. You know, try something different occasionally and just, you know, watch the game and get a feel for how that pitcher who's in there is throwing. He was throwing great, 79 pitches. Keep him in there.
Yeah. Hey, Chad, moving on over, I want to talk to, you know, the Flyers in the Philadelphia sports world lost a legend on Monday with the passing of two-time Stanley Cup champion Rick McLeish. And, you know, you and I, we grew up in that era. Of the Broad Street Bullies. Rick McLeish was certainly a great part of that and has been a fixture in the community ever since. And talk about a guy that, along with the rest of those Broad Street Bullies, certainly going to be missed in the Philadelphia sports scene.
I'm going to talk a little bit more about Rick McLeish in my parting shot later on, but, yeah, I was really saddened by the news of his passing. Just 66 years old. I know he had some health issues in recent years. He was absolutely one of my favorites from those cup-winning Flyers teams. He probably looked kind of lazy or like he was just going through the motions some of the time, but that was just the way he skated. It just kind of came easy to him. He was really smooth, had the great wrist shot, and he certainly came up big on many occasions during those glory days for the orange and black in the 70s. And as I said, I'll have a little more to say about that later on.
Well, I kind of had a feeling that was going to be your parting shot, but I will go on a little further with that because I did want to mention, I saw a handful of the quotes from former players, but just a couple that I want to mention is one is Bobby Clark saying that Rick McLeish was the most talented guy on that team. I thought I thought was pretty quite the compliment. And even a couple of the other players, teammates, said the same thing. And then Gary Dornhofer, it was, that said that McLeish had the skills of a Claude Giroux, an Eric Lindros, or a Peter Forsberg-type player back in the 70s. And I thought, man, you want to talk about, you know, putting the guy's talent and skills up in some pretty high company. That was pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's some nice company. And, you know, he's got his name all over the Flyers record books. He's in the top 10 in all the major categories. And he was just fun to watch. I liked watching him skate, and we know what he did in some of the big games, which I'll talk about later. By the way, he is the fifth player now from the 74 or 75 Stanley Cup championship teams who we've lost from the Flyers. Barry Ashby, of course, but also Wayne Stevenson, Bill Flett, and Ross Lansbury. So, you know, another one leaves us too soon at age 66.
Yes, sir. Well, hey, Chet, you mentioned with Barrett, you talked about the NBA championship, but the NHL championship is also underway. And, you know, the dreaded Pittsburgh Penguins came back from a 3-2 deficit to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning to reach the finals. And now they lead San Jose 1-0. And Golden State, with the best record in the NBA, had their backs against the wall, had to come back and beat Oklahoma City, and now they will play LeBron James and the Cavaliers in the finals. You making predictions on this series, or these two series yourself?
I'm not making any prediction on the NHL, the Stanley Cup. To be honest, since the Flyers got eliminated, I haven't watched much at all, just an occasional, you know, couple of minutes here and there. I'm rooting against the Penguins just because that's what we do in Philadelphia, so go Sharks, but I can't make a prediction. I don't know. Let's just hope San Jose wins. As far as the NBA, yeah, I'm watching and I'm enjoying it, and I think it's going to be a great series. I really do. I mean, last year, you know, Cleveland was without a couple of their main guys, Love and Kyrie Irving. So we'll see how they do this year with a full complement of players. I think Barrett Brooks might be onto something because, Cleveland, I think, is at full strength, and the Warriors, meanwhile, have just been really pressed to the limit, of course, coming back from a 3-1 deficit to win the West Finals. I think they're going to be a little worn, a little tired maybe going into the finals. You can't just flip a switch and say, yeah, we're going to be able to do this. So I think Barrett may be onto something. I'm ready to also predict Cleveland wins the NBA Finals. LeBron gets his ring for the city of Cleveland.
Well, I am going to also say that I think LeBron is going to win this championship, and I think he now has the supporting cast of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and I, you know, for the first time, at least in Cleveland, he's really got some players around him, and he's pretty good, by the way.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, there's a lot of talent on both of these teams, so I think it's going to be a really, really fun series to watch. I mean, just as it was fun watching Golden State come back in games 6 and 7 against the Thunder, boy, now they're going to go up against LeBron and company. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I will be watching the NBA Finals for sure.
Well, and going back to the Penguins-Sharks series is, you know, I've actually watched, you know, because of the local with Tampa, you know, I watched that series, and, you know, Pittsburgh, it wasn't long ago we were talking about Pittsburgh and the Flyers fighting for playoff spots. If Pittsburgh got healthy, has played great through the end of the regular season, has been great in the playoffs, and I hate to tell you, my friend, but I think they're going to win this thing, and I'm not going to be very happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to make a pick, you would have to say Penguins for sure. Boy, I hope I'm wrong, but yeah, the Penguins look like they're going to be the better team, and they got game one already, so it's probably going to be another cup for the Penguins.
Boy, I sure hope not. But hey, jump back over to basketball for a second. Oklahoma City, we spoke about them. Kevin Durant is about ready to hit the free agent market, and you are in the hot seat of the Philadelphia 76ers. You ready to go after a player like Kevin Durant?
Hell yeah. Joel Embiid's ready, too. He says, bring him aboard. So, of course, Embiid also thought that he might have a shot at LeBron James 2 years ago, just after Embiid had been drafted. That certainly didn't happen. I don't think they're going to even considerate or, you know, talk to them, but I would love them to. That would be just incredible. Watch season ticket sales if they got, you know, Ben Simmons and Kevin Durant. That would be quite impressive. Is it going to happen? Highly unlikely, but we can talk about it. Sure, I would love to see it.
Hey, why not? Why not be a player? They got plenty of money. They got plenty of picks. They got plenty of a lot of stuff except wins. Why not go all in and see if you can get a guy? If you make him the best offer and he chooses to go somewhere else, hey, you've done your best. But why not, you know, put the hinky piece to the puzzle together here and get
yep.
this top-notch superstar. You surround him with all these young kids and get this thing rolling.
I would do it, absolutely. I hope they do at least talk to him and see what they can, you know, say to him, because they can sell him on the fact that they got a lot of young talent and they're really putting the pieces in place now, and they should be a contender within 2 years, I think, for the East Championship. Did I say that? Yeah. I think they're going to make the playoffs, not this year, but the following year, and make a little bit of a run, because I'm counting on Embiid being able to at least, you know, be a player. He might not be an immediate superstar, but I'm hoping he can stay healthy. And if he is, and they put the right pieces around him, they're going to be a fun team to watch.
Yes, they are. All right, well, hey, let's get our trivia question out here one more time, because if you were listening, it was right there for you. We talked about it for a full minute at the top of the show, and here it goes. Barrett Brooks played with the Steelers with a player that I coached throughout his high school career at Lake Gibson High School in Lakeland, Florida. What was his name? And you know what, Chet? If you weren't listening and you Googled that, I'm thinking you'd probably find that answer as well. But we'll leave that up to the listeners.
Yep. And by the way, how good was Barrett Brooks with us? Barrett was just a lot of fun, and, boy, he knows his football. He was great to talk to.
He certainly was, and like I said, as much as I enjoyed the football, that whole thing with the nursing school and his wife is pretty darn impressive for a guy coming out of the National Football League. And, you know, there's still a lot of people with the whole dumb jock thing. Not so
yeah.
much there if you're talking to Mr. Barrett Brooks.
Yep, he was good, and I really enjoyed talking to him, so we'll definitely have to get him on again in the fall, because I had another 20 questions or so written down for Barrett, including, you know, what it was like to play for Bill Cowher, what it was like to win a Super Bowl. He was, you know, a reserve as an offensive lineman with the Steelers, but still, he got a Super Bowl ring, which he showed to me up close, so that was another question. What it was like working with Ron Jaworski on the NFL Matchup Show. I had, like I said, another dozen or 20 questions.
Well, you know, I had one I wanted to get to also with him is he played at Kansas State. He played for Coach Bill Snyder, who has become a legend in his own right. And Barrett was in the very first bowl team when Bill Snyder took over. They had won one game in like 3 years. And Barrett was part of the first group that played Coach Snyder out there and ended up going to a bowl game. And then ended up being drafted into the NFL by the Eagles in the second round. But he was he's a ground-level guy in the whole building of the Kansas State football program as well.
Yes, indeed.
So, all right, let's get our signing update at Carl's Cards and Collectibles, Chet. The first Flyers captain, Lou Angotti, is in the store tonight, June 1. That's tonight, Chet, and we missed it.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. Brian Dawkins will be in the store Saturday, June 19th. That's Father's Day weekend. Don't miss that. Former Eagles pro running back, all-pro running back, Wilbert Montgomery will be in the store on June the 25th. And former Flyer Sean Podine will be in the store on July the 23rd. So stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give them a call, 610-789-4996. And you can also visit the website, carlscards.com, or contact Carl on Twitter at carlscards. And, Chet, we have somebody special again lined up for next week. Who we got?
Yeah, we have the great Leslie Goodell joining us for a second time. She was on with us last summer, and she was just wonderful talking about the Phillies and about her daughter's medical condition. And she has this website, Kendall's Crusade, to talk about this problem, the AVM. And she's getting better, which is the great news. And they're having a big benefit in July with a very famous comedian involved. And we want to talk about that a little bit, as well as whatever we can say about the Phillies. And hopefully they'll be in a little winning streak by next Wednesday. So Leslie Goodell back on the show with us next week.
Oh, I can't wait. She's good. And like you say, she brings a lot more to the table than the Phillies and what she does for her job as well. Great, great lady doing great things.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, Mr. Chesko, we are a little ahead of schedule, and I can tell you I don't have a parting shot for tonight because I've been traveling and my head's been spinning. So it's your turn for a parting shot, and you even get a little bit of extra time for it tonight if you'd like.
Well, before I do that, let me ask you this, since we have the extra time. Did you see the news coming out of Los Angeles today that Nick Foles is staying away from the OTAs? Nick Foles, the former Eagle who, you know, signed the deal with the Rams after he was traded for Bradford, he's staying away from Rams OTAs because he's apparently not happy about being the third stringer. I loved Nick Foles, but who the heck is he to stay away from camp because he's not happy?
Well, I did not see that. But you know what, Chet? Best job is the backup quarterback holding the clipboard because he's everybody's favorite player. The only better job is to be the third-string quarterback holding the clipboard because you're not ever going to get in, and you're still going to make a lot of money. Show up.
Yeah, and he's still
– show up.
Exactly. He's still on that deal, so he's making some money and doesn't have to do a whole lot of work. So good for you, Nick, but get back into camp, will you?
Well, does he think somebody's going to trade for him?
Yeah, I don't think so. That ain't going to happen.
No. Come on, Nick. Come on, Nick's agent. Somebody, get it together.
Yeah. We have a lot of football to talk over the next couple of months, but I just wanted to throw that out there. So, ready for the parting shot?
Well, That was good. I have to say that was good. And I hadn't heard that, but gets my blood running
Nick
a little
Foles.
Bit.
All right. As we discussed earlier,
Mr. Chesko.
Yes, as we discussed, we lost another one of my sports heroes earlier this week with the passing Monday night of Flyers center Rick McLeish, who had battled meningitis plus kidney and liver problems. McLeish was one of the guys that I loved to watch back in the 70s. Such a smooth skater. But he also had that terrific wrist shot. He scored 50 goals in the 72-73 season, and he led the NHL in playoff scoring in the Flyers' two cup-winning years. That's right, both postseasons, 74 and 75. All of us old guys know that it was McLeish who scored the only goal for the Flyers, the only one that they needed, actually, and the only one that anybody got that day in the Game 6 cup-clinching game against the Bruins in 1974 when he tipped in a Moose DuPont shot in the first period. But as Jim Watson reminded us in talking about his old teammate on Tuesday, it was also McLeish who set up DuPont for the game-tying goal late in Game 2 of that series, a contest the Flyers would then win in overtime to even the series at a game apiece. So if he didn't set that one up, we might not have been talking about that first Stanley Cup. All these years later, McLeish is still sixth in Flyers history with 328 regular season goals, and he's number four among Flyers in postseason scoring. And this is, 40-some years after those Stanley Cups. How about the quote from Bobby Clarke that you mentioned, Bill, reacting to the news of McLeish's passing? Clarke saying, "Ricky was the most talented player the Flyers had during the 1970s. High praise indeed. Rick McLeish dead at age 66, and he will be missed."
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. And if, like you say, if you're our age, Chet, and you talk about the Rick McLeishes and you talk about even probably higher than you talk about the Moses Malones, because Rick McLeish was with the Flyers for a lot longer than Moses was with the 76ers, but certainly will be missed, certainly a great player, and certainly someone people our age grew up with as a fan and turned out to be a real good person in the Philadelphia area and Philadelphia community as well.
And I know Carl Henderson was a fan of McLeish as well. He had him into Carl's cards at least once, maybe more. And he's posted some great pictures of McLeish in the store on Twitter that I saw today. So I know Carl's feeling that loss as well, because anybody who watched the Flyers back in the 70s and, you know, rooted for them liked McLeish. He was just a likable guy. He was quiet, but, boy, he was fun to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we're gonna talk about this on another program too, Chad, because I got thinking about this. You know, Willie Mays just celebrated his 85th birthday. Rick McLeish was 66. Pete Rose is 72, 73 years old. Where are these, you know, where's time going? Because you and I aren't getting any older, my friend.
We're not at all, no.
All
eternally
right.
Young.
Yes, sir. All right, Chet. We have one more minute before we have to get to our closing. Anything else on your mind tonight, since we did not give away this easy trivia question answer?
Let's see. No, I'm good. I'm looking forward to the NBA Finals. Like I said, I just came to my conclusion. I'm going to pick the Cavs, so I probably just jinxed it for the city of Cleveland. Sorry about that. But I'm rooting for the Cavs now since I picked them, and I'm rooting against the Penguins, even though I think they're probably going to win.
Well, I am with you. I hate that we're agreeing. That's just not near as much fun. All right. Okay, well, we're at the top of the hour. Let's thank our special guest, Barrett Brooks, Carl's Cards and Collectibles, for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, June 8th at 7 p.m. with our special guest, Leslie Cadell. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.